This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
Near the end of the 11th century, a man whose name can be approximated in English as Eight-Deer Jaguar Claw, one of the most powerful rulers in Mexico at the time, submitted to a ceremony in which his nose was pierced with a sharpened bone tool. This action allowed him thereafter to wear a polished greenstone ornament inserted in his nose, joining a group of noble men and women in this region who historical manuscripts show wearing a variety of stone and shell nasal ornaments. Nasal ornaments were not the only form of adornment in ancient Mexican society, attached to the body through permanently pierced openings. Eight-Deer Jaguar Claw lived in the area historically occupied by Mixtec-speaking people, today the state of Oaxaca in Mexico. His Mixtec society inherited long-established practices that were shared with neighboring politically, linguistically, and culturally distinct societies, today identified as Mesoamerica. In this talk, I'll review evidence from a number of other regions, from central Mexico in the north to Honduras on the east, that formed part of this network of related societies. While making no attempt to be comprehensive, I will review evidence for permanent body modifications that appear in this network of societies beginning before 1000 BC and continuing for almost 3,000 years until the 16th century, when Spanish invasion disrupted indigenous societies from Mexico through Central America. Within this regional tradition, beginning before 1000 BC, all adults wore stone, shell, or fired clay spools threaded through the ear. The most elaborate examples have wide flanges presenting a surface toward a viewer, which was often inscribed with additional imagery. Fundamentally, however, the shared adult practice was the display of pierced and culturally expanded earlobes. Ear piercing continued to be a central part of adult life throughout this region in the millennia that followed. We understand this practice by its depiction in images and through the recovery of ear ornaments in burials and household trash in societies like those of the classic Maya, dating between 250 and 800 AD. In artworks produced in the courts of Maya rulers, both men and women are shown wearing round spools with central cylindrical beads protruding. Examples of ear ornaments excavated from locations next to the skulls of buried individuals show how these were assembled and worn, and parallel the imagery of living Maya nobles. In painted images, such ornaments are colored green, suggesting the jade used to make those recovered archaeologically from the most elaborate tombs. But other materials were used, such as obsidian, a black volcanic glass. The form of this pair of ear spools mimics the long-used, simple spool form, most commonly made of fired clay. The social significance of such items in the lives of the ruling families is reinforced by the text on this early classic Maya example, which names this pair of ear spools as the property of a noble woman. Ear ornaments of distinctive forms were prominently depicted in later pre-Hispanic historical manuscripts, telling the story of Eight-Deer and other Mixtec families. Some recall the wide flange and central beads of the classic Maya variety, while others are shown in profile as tubes, extending in front of and behind the earlobe. What unites all these forms is their signifying that the person has had their ears pierced and widened. So important were ear spools to identity that one of the key steps in subjecting an enemy during hand-to-hand combat was the removal of their ear ornaments to be replaced by flexible material, thread, or cloth. This action is recorded in both classic Maya imagery dated before 800 AD and in Mexica or Aztec imagery from the 16th century. Throughout Mesoamerica, ear ornaments were worn by both men and women. While the members of ruling families used ornaments made of rare polished stones like jade, people of other social ranks also wore ear spools. Examples I excavated in Honduras are typical, made of bone, shell, or fired clay, in addition to polished stone. Why did the people in this region invest their energy in practices like these, designed to permanently alter the human body? What were the intended effects of these actions? How did the people in these communities understand the body modifications and wearing of ornaments that they allowed? To explore these questions, I take a long-term historical perspective on practices of body modification in the region. I draw on evidence from imagery, artifacts recovered archaeologically, and traces of practices detectable on the human skeleton. Beginning about 3,000 years ago with the earliest village sites where the human body was represented, and the first hints of body ornamentation are visible, and examining practices through to the latest imperial capital, that of the Mexica or Aztec of central Mexico. In the 16th century, the new Spanish administrators of Mexica territory developed a variety of documents, some primarily images, others primarily text, in order to assist them in extraction of wealth and control of the indigenous population. While not developed out of any abstract desire to document indigenous societies, these manuscripts provide a wealth of information that indirectly illuminates the practices through which Mexica people shaped and adorned their bodies. Combining visual images and texts, I've traced a sequence of moments in the lives of Mexica people when their bodies were marked by the provision of piercings. I draw on statements in which Mexica people describe newborn infants as unworked raw material, needing to be shaped into cultural form by the adults around them. It's this need for cultural shaping, I suggest, that was the goal of the sequences of piercings experienced by Mexica people. Particularly critical was a ceremony in the month of Izcalli, the last in the Mexica solar year. During this month, rituals were practiced in which plants and children were encouraged to grow by being stretched, illustrating the Mexica view of children as more like non-human entities than like the adults they were destined to become. Every 4 years, a cohort of children were brought to neighborhood temples by ritual sponsors during Izcalli. There, at midnight, their ears were pierced. At dawn, they were brought back to their homes, where the adults celebrated with dancing, singing, and drinking alcoholic beverages. In the afternoon, their ritual sponsors returned with the children to the temple, bringing special child-sized drinking vessels for them to have their first taste of the intoxicating drink pulque, reserved for special occasions. Their entry into adult life had begun. The holes pierced in the children's ears, used initially to produce sacrificial blood, were left open with cotton threaded through, beginning a process of enlarging the perforation to enable wearing of ear spools. This process can be recognized in assemblages of discarded ear ornaments at different sites, like those recorded at Tlaxcalan. These show a gradation in spool diameter needed for gradual expansion of the ear opening from youthful age through to older adult. The moment of ear piercing recorded for the Mexica, coming between the ages of 4 and 8, was not actually the first time when children's bodies were pierced for ornaments. Already in infancy, each child was dedicated to an adult life, either of service in the temple or of participation in secular activities. Children dedicated to temple service had their bodies marked with ritual scarification on the hips and chest. For boys with a secular destiny, the promise of their return in their teens to the all-male establishments called houses of youths, where they would learn adult ritual singing, dancing, and the arts of war, was signified by piercing of their lip to enable eventual wearing of lip plugs. But Mexica lip plugs were not displayed by all adult males. Their use was a mark of achievement in warfare. The children destined to train in the houses of youths would not all reach the level of proficiency to display these markers. For the Mexica, then, piercing of the body was part of a lifelong process of shaping the human being and marking its distinctive achievements and ultimate identity. Combined with clothing and hairstyles, indicative of age and sex, piercings and their ornamentation produced a readable body that others in this large urban society could quickly assess. Who was an adult by their display of ear spools? Who was dedicated to religion and who to secular life? And within the secular male trajectory, which men had reached the pinnacle of capturing enemies. With the Mashika model pointing me toward seeing body modification as a process for shaping the adult personhood, I explored a series of earlier case studies, beginning with data from my own research in Honduras' Alua River Valley. Here, at an early village site called Playa de los Muertos, an archaeologist working in the 1920s identified a village where residents buried their familial dead near their houses. Many of these burials were accompanied by artifacts, allowing me to begin to explore the practices of body modification that employed some of the tools. A few burials also incorporated fired clay figural sculptures in the form of bottles and solid figurines, along with body ornaments. Figurines in this distinctive Playa de los Muertos style were collected by museums as well, and I've recorded the details of body ornamentation displayed on hundreds of them. Central to my analysis are deliberate manipulations of hair, which was shaped in a variety of ways, including shaving into complex patterns. Related patterns would have been produced in designs stamped on the bodies of living people. Both the stamps employed, the pigments, and palettes to grind them were included in the burial assemblages at Playa de los Muertos, underlining the significance of this practice at a critical moment of life transition. Hair was also shown threaded through with beads, possibly including some of the forms of fired clay, shell, and jade ornaments recovered in large numbers from early villages with these figurines. I treated the population of figurines as a proxy for the living population. I understand that this is an idealized population, representing the human body in ways that suggest norms, not the actual range of personal appearance. By treating these figurines so lifelike in their details as an idealization of human appearance, I was able to identify a series of appearance cues linked to transitions in the life course. This begins in infancy, with infants shown lying on their backs or held in the arms of adults. They display no ear ornaments and their hair flows long without any apparent treatment. They are shown wearing strands of beads at their wrists and ankles, like the sets of shell and jade beads actually worn by children buried in the village. Youthful figures with long locks of hair that is culturally manipulated follow. Often, these figures display pierced holes in the earlobes. In some cases, the circular face of ear spools worn by these youthful figures is carefully delineated. These match examples excavated from these early sites made of fired clay, shell, bone, and greenstone. The most elaborate ear ornaments composed of spools with dangling beads are displayed by figurines with clear marks of age, including facial wrinkles and toothless mouths. Their hair shows distinctive evidence of cropping, with only a few long locks remaining. In my work on these figurines and the lives of the villagers who made and used them, I argue that they represent stages in a formalized sequence of age grades, marked by body modification. The piercing of ears was the key sign of adult status, but other forms of marking that we view as impermanent, hair treatment, body painting, and the wearing of jewelry, are equally important. By comparing the idealized histories of body modification, represented by images, bodily remains, and artifacts from multiple societies throughout the history of this region, I've been able to show that piercing of the ears and the widening of the piercing to wear ear ornaments was the longest-lived and fundamental sign of adulthood from Mexico to Honduras from before 1000 BC to the 16th century. Other forms of permanent body modification show more variation. The nose piercing that gave eight-deer jaguar claw the right to display a greenstone bead is interpreted by scholars as a sign of new status as a ruler allied with an ancient center of civilization, Tula, which served late pre-Hispanic Mesoamerica as something like Rome in medieval Europe, a source of primordial authority. Scholars suggest that nose piercing was also part of the investiture of a ruler at Chichen Itza, a Maya center in Yucatan that rose to prominence after 800 AD, a ritual recorded in carved scenes preserved inside a temple. Nose piercing prepared the way for a wide range of ornaments, each of which may have had distinct political significance within the late Mesoamerican societies where we find these ornaments and depictions of their use. Compared to the uniformity of ear spools, nasal ornaments convey more individuality. Some sites of body piercings seem to have served in distinctive ways for neighboring societies. While lip plugs were limited in Mexica society to men who achieved distinction in warfare, Angelica Costa argues that among the neighboring Tlaxcaltecs, there may have been a higher level of use of lip plugs, owing to the presence in their military of a distinct ethnic group, the Otomi, for whom lip plugs were a more common ornament. This kind of region-to-region, community-by-community variation in the significance of permanent body modification is evident in other practices as well. From an early date, Mesoamerican people manipulated dental appearance, filing and chipping teeth into socially preferred formats. In one case from Honduras, my colleagues and I suggest the filed teeth depicted on a woman likely marked her as a member of a family with higher status than the male with whom she is associated. In a study of dental modification at a slightly later Maya site, Mayapan, scholars demonstrate a higher frequency of teeth filing in images of women as well. At Mayapan, data from human remains also show a distinction in frequency of dental filing between men and women, with women more invested in this practice regardless of social status or wealth. These scholars note that not all women at Mayapan engaged in this practice. The diversity of fashions in tooth modification contrasted with relative uniformity in another practice, cranial shaping, a practice through which infant bodies were molded to meet adult preferences for appearance. At Mayapan, dental filing was a choice that we might describe as one of fashion, a preference related to family or local networks, resisting conformity within the context of a homogenizing urban center. What emerges from research on the long history of body modification in Mesoamerica is on the one hand incredibly complex and might seem to resist any attempt at generating wider understanding. While some practices are virtually universal, others are unique, and some vary in the way they spread within local populations. Yet each of these practices can be understood as responses to shared philosophies of the human being as an entity that is not born fully formed, but that needs continual social efforts to shape an adult person. This shaping was both ethical through instruction and literal through body modification. Through a suite of practices that began with shaping the skull in infancy, continued with a variety of piercings, and were constantly reinforced by additions of ornaments, permanent body modification located the adult person in relation to others in society, family, and history. Spawning technologies of intervention in bodily development and other technologies needed to provide the inorganic extensions of the body that made up the fully formed adult person, practices of permanent body modification were culturally shared forms of knowledge through which both the person and the society itself were given form. Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.